Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Give us a call. The number is 208-991-4783. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Also, as we are in our listener support campaign, I do encourage you to go to support.greatdetectives.net. As usual, all donations of $7 or more receive access to our premium site. All donations of $20 or more will receive a special extra gift in addition to that. You can learn about the gifts there, which include some Colonial Radio Theater radio dramas, and we'll get into that in a second. One thing that we are always careful on this show is we always want to honor the legitimate copyright concerns of people out there. Because there are some entities out there, not naming names or pointing fingers, but they'll basically say anything that's audio drama or even, in some cases, audio books is fair game. We certainly don't go that way. We've got pretty good standards and policies in place to make sure that we're protecting and honoring copyright. All that to say that today's broadcast is done with the permission of the Colonial Radio Theater on the air. For those of you who follow the post I did, I interviewed Jerry Robbins of the Colonial Radio Theater about a year or two ago about some of his work with the Colonial Radio Theater. And in every listener support campaign, Colonial Radio Theater dramas, such as Zorro and the Pirate Raiders, and their Father Brown and Perry Mason dramas, are among highlighted items that we give away as thank you gifts to those who support our listener support campaign. And we do that to, one, reward our listeners, and two, to promote and encourage their work with radio drama. They've got an incredible story. They began doing this in 1995, and for 17 years they've been producing radio dramas. They've been getting better at what they do. They've done quite a few public domain stories, such as Prince and the Pauper and King Solomon's Mine. But they've also contracted with some published authors, including the late Ray Bradbury. They did a very good adaptation of his Martian Chronicles. And so I was appearing on a podcast to talk about podcasting. And I mentioned this, what we do with the listener support campaign, as well as our including of Colonial Radio Theater dramas in what we offer. And Jerry emailed me and offered, said you can play one Father Brown episode for your listeners. So I decided to take him up on this offer. So for the first time ever, we will be sampling and sharing with you a modern radio drama. This will also give you an idea of kind of the quality of some of the Colonial Radio Theater dramas that were sending out during the listener support campaign. Now, today's episode of Father Brown is called The Quick One. The Quick One was a short story originally published and compiled in G.K. Chesterton's 1935 Father Brown collection, The Scandal of Father Brown. This was also adapted as part of the 1974 Father Brown TV series that aired in the U.K., over ITV, but to be honest, I prefer this version myself. Before we do get started, I should offer just a word of caution to parents. Usually, because we're playing vintage old-time radio, there's no swearing included. There is, however, some swearing in this episode, and this is actually consistent with the story that G.K. Chesterton wrote. And so that is one thing Colonial Radio Theater does, is they're very consistent with the stories they tell, rather than trying to create their own spin. So with that advisor, and so it'd be about maybe PG for language, so be advised. All right, well now it's time for today's episode, this special Father Brown episode, recorded June 4th of 2008, The Quick One.
The Father Brown Mysteries, starring J.T. Turner as Father Brown. Dramatized for radio by M.J. Elliott, and the stories by G.K. Chesterton. Tonight's episode, The Quick One.
Service! Hello? Can we have some service here, please? An unmanned bar at this time of the evening.
Not to worry, Inspector. Do sit down. You're not really that desperate for a drink, are you?
Miles away from anywhere, forced to stay overnight in a dilapidated hotel until the next train back to London.
I've stayed in far worse establishments than the Maypole and Garland.
I mean, look at it. Like some sort of sham palace in a Hollywood Arabian Nights fantasy. You can see from the faded patches on the wall that a flintlock used to hang there, a stuffed fish over there, and a picture here.
Very likely a sporting print.
Service? Hello?
Have a seat, Inspector.
I may as well offer you a penny for your thoughts, Father Brown, as nobody seems to want my pennies for anything else.
I don't know why, but I was thinking how easy it would be to commit a murder here.
Oh, you mean those Turkish daggers on the wall? Well, there are plenty of things to commit murder with, but no more than there are in any ordinary kitchen. Carving knives or pokers or whatnot.
I wasn't actually thinking of the furnishings. It just occurred to me that...
Oh, we've got company. Commercial travellers. Well, they're in for a big disappointment if they're expecting to be served.
Get the move on, Wills. These fellows are dying of thirst here.
I'm sure I'm very sorry, Mr. Jukes. We're rather understaffed at present, and I had to attend to something in the hotel. Now, who's first?
A little scotch and soda for me.
Would you look at that? Bloody typical. I beg your pardon, Father.
Oh, you are forgiven. Now, you were saying something about murder.
Well, murder's always easy. There can't possibly be anything easier. Not that I intend it, Father Brown, but I could murder you at this minute. More easily than I can get a drink in this damned...
Inspector Craven, what's the matter?
Oh.
Good Lord.
Good evening, gentlemen. Mr. Willis, Mr. Wills, a glass of milk, please.
Certainly, Reverend. And what about your friend?
I will have the same as the Reverend Price Jones.
Two milks. Coming right up, gentlemen.
Milk. Milk, if you please. The doctor says I'm not to have these shocks. And then you come and drink milk and cold blood before my very eyes.
Well, this is turning into quite an unusual evening, I must say.
Yes, I'm aware of the Reverend David Price Jones from the newspapers. Prohibition and purification of our land and the Britons overseas is his slogan.
Shun the bowl and bring out the cow, you mean?
You may ask, sir, why does our friend here set an example to Christians in truly Christian self-control and brotherhood?
I wasn't asking.
Why does he stand here as a model of true Christianity, of real refinement, of genuine gentlemanly behavior amid all the quarrels and riots of such places as the Maypole and Garland? Because, whatever the doctrinal differences between us, at least in his soil, the evil plant, the accursed hop or vine, has never ever been...
Willis, is this a bar or a temperance lecture hall?
Someone else will get served before me.
My condolences, Inspector. Would you like me to...
No, Father. I'm enjoying the show. This Akbar fellow doesn't say much, does he?
And you will have your usual, Mr. Ragley?
That's the only decent stuff you've still got. Damn it, I sometimes think the only English thing left in England is cherry brandy.
The crank brigade is out in force, it seems.
There's an infernal swindle going on now in every inn in the country that would have raised a revolution in any other country. I've found out a thing or two about it, I can tell you.
A man after our own hearts, Mr. Akbar.
Oh, dear.
What are you talking about?
Prohibition. Mr. Ragley, isn't it? And it seems perfectly sensible to me that if Prohibition is right...
I'll drink to that if...
If Prohibition is right, then some honor must be due to the first Prohibitionist. I refer, of course, to the Prophet Muhammad.
I think the Reverend Price Jones has confused Mr. Ragley's idea of bad drink with his own idea that drink is bad.
I have, of late, corresponded with the leaders of the Mohammedan religious thought and have induced my distinguished friend, Mr. Akbar, to come and lecture in England on the ancient Muslim veto on wine.
I think things are about to turn nasty. Come on, Father.
Why, I believe we in England would do better to take a broader theological outlook.
A broader? Damn your soul! Do you mean that Englishmen mustn't drink English beer because wine was forbidden in a damned desert by that dirty old humbug Muhammad?
Oh my!
You insolent dog! You insult the Prophet!
He's grabbing a knife! Get down, Ragley!
Die!
Blast your eyes, sir.
Mr. Ragley, my name is Inspector Craven, Scotland Yard. Do you charge this man?
Charge him? Charge him? Of course not. I'd stand him a drink if he were allowed any. I hadn't any business to insult his religion. Your good health, sir.
Well, now that he's called us all skunks, peace and harmony seem to be restored. I wish I could charge that bloody teetotal lecturer.
The Reverend Price Jones?
He was the one who made all the mischief.
Did you notice anything unusual in that bar, Inspector?
Unusual? Father, we just saw one man throw a knife at another, and what do you call unusual?
After Mr. Jukes and his friends left for the commercial room, did you happen to notice a glass?
I noticed several.
Well, this one stood near the Reverend Price Jones's glass of milk, and it still held an inch or two of whiskey.
So?
Well, you and I didn't even get served. So, whose whiskey was it?
Probably one of the commercial travelers. They all had whiskey. They generally do.
But this glass was left behind.
Well, an accident, I suppose. The man could easily get another in the commercial room afterwards.
No, no, no. You've got to see these people as they are. These sort of men are mostly simple men, and not one of them would leave his whiskey unfinished. Now, I take it as certain that the glass had been nearly emptied by somebody else. Somebody we haven't thought about yet.
Supposing that's true, what does it matter?
Matter? Oh, it probably doesn't. But it's interesting all the same, don't you think?
Good night, Father. See you in the morning.
Inspector! Inspector!
Coming! Coming!
Inspector, I'm so terribly sorry for waking you.
Father, is it still nighttime?
Very early morning. I wonder if you would care to join me in the bar. I say, this is rather like the business with Lord Staines, eh? Remember, you woke me early one morning by knocking on my door.
Father, it's very early. What was it you wanted me to see?
Yes, of course. I offered to take on some of the duties in the neighboring parish, so I rose early.
And when you passed the bar, you saw that.
Mr. Ragley, dead, with a heavy-hilted crooked dagger rammed through his heart.
The same dagger thrown at him by Akbar.
This is terrible.
Mr. Wills, have any of your guests left the hotel yet?
No. Everybody's still here. I mean, the Reverend Price Jones and that, and his friend aren't guests. You'll find them in town if you'd care to look for them, I mean.
How could Ragley have lain there all night without anyone noticing?
Well, Mr. Jukes and his colleagues retired to the commercial room just before you retired, gentlemen. Mr. Ragley was still alive when I left, I can assure you.
No one is to leave. Do you understand?
No one. I understand, Inspector.
Oh, Mr. Wills?
Yes, Father Brown?
Yesterday evening, when you were serving at the bar, did you serve anyone with whiskey? A whiskey they then left half-finished.
Half-finished? I hardly think so, Father. Not with my clientele.
Thank you, Mr. Wills. That will be all. Well, Inspector, You were saying how easy murder can be. It seems that someone is determined to prove you correct by doing away with the argumentative Mr. Ragley.
It's this damned shyness about owning up to a murder that riles me, Father. This silly modesty murderers have about their own masterpieces.
You mean they insist on sticking to this extraordinary fixed idea of killing people without being found out?
Precisely. The only difficulty is committing a murder without committing oneself as a murderer. But there's one kind that can't ever be prevented.
Murder committed by a fanatic.
Anybody who doesn't mind being a murderer could do it. That's where the madman is like the martyr, sort of beyond this world. A real fanatic can always kill anybody he likes.
Do you have anybody in mind, Inspector Craven?
What do you reckon to that fellow, Akbar? Do you think he's the sort who believes that if he's hanged, he'll go straight to paradise for defending the honor of the Prophet? I mean, he did try to attack Ragley with this very dagger.
If you're looking for a fanatic, Inspector, I suppose we had the honor of entertaining in this very bar yesterday about the biggest and loudest and most fat-headed fanatic in the modern world. If being a pig-headed idiot with one idea is the way to murder, I put in a claim for my reverend brother, Price Jones.
The prohibitionist?
And his glass of milk was standing side by side on the counter with the mysterious glass of whiskey.
And you think it was mixed up with the murder? I don't know whether you're really serious or not, Father.
More in any case than I am about the knife wound. You see, Inspector, in a way it doesn't matter who stabbed him.
It doesn't matter? Is this a new morality, Father?
Oh, I didn't say it didn't matter who murdered Ragley. Of course the man who stabbed him might possibly be the man who murdered him. But then again, it might be quite a different man. Of course, you'll want to work on the hilt for fingerprints, but don't take too much notice of them. I can imagine other reasons for people sticking this knife in the poor old boy. Not very edifying reasons, of course, but quite distinct from murder.
Of course! What a damn fool I am! There isn't enough blood for the dagger to be the murder weapon. It must have been stuck in the corpse when it had been cold for hours. Well, I suppose there'll have to be an autopsy. But why was Ragley stabbed?
In good time, Inspector. There's someone I have to speak to first.
As you wish, Father.
Mind your feet, sir.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I wonder, could you please stop scrubbing for a moment? There's something I'd like to discuss with you.
Excuse me, officer?
Inspector Craven, Scotland Yard.
Yes. I wonder how much longer are we going to be stuck here? I've got several more clients to visit before the day's out. I'm in wines and spirits, you see.
I see. Very impressive, Mr.
Jukes. Jasper Jukes.
I have important matters to deal with. Your customers will just have to be patient.
Come in.
Officer, Inspector!
It'll have to wait, Mr. Jukes.
Bloomin' cheek! And this is what we pay our taxes for?
Yes, Father. I remember him. He might have been a bagman.
A bagman? Oh, you mean a commercial traveler.
Yes, sir. But he didn't stick to the other bagman. He went in and came out again almost immediately.
And did anybody see him? I mean the staff of the hotel.
No, Father. I don't think anybody saw him.
And yet somehow he got a glass of whiskey from the bar.
I must say, Mr. Wills, I wished all murderers went to pieces as easily as you do.
I'm not a murderer, Inspector. I just...
You just stuck the dagger into Earl Ragley.
After I found him dead at the end of the night, I thought he must have been poisoned.
Most likely he was. We'll have to check that bottle of cherry brandy.
I just lost my head. I suppose I thought if you found the body with that Turkish knife in it, you'd think the fellow in the turban must have done it.
And he'd hang for it. So, in trying to prove yourself innocent of Ragley's death, you'd be responsible for Akbar's. Sounds like murder to me.
No, you're just twisting things.
You're the very last man who'd ever would stick a knife into a live person, Wills, but you've got the nerve to stick it into a dead one. And you're the very first person to be frightened of being charged with what you didn't do, and to make a damn fool of yourself in the process.
Megan, can you describe the man you saw?
I never really got a proper look at him. He was wearing a sort of Inverness cape.
Good.
And he said he must reach Edinburgh by next morning. That's right. He's a Scotsman. Why didn't I remember that before?
Well, this is a rum case, Father. rum and whiskey and cherry brandy. The manager, Wills, is a slippery little toad, but I'm really not sure we have anything against him. You don't seem surprised by his confession, though.
No, I'm not, Inspector. Not in the least. I knew the primary suspicion would rest on the manager. That was why I didn't suspect him. You see, I rather fancied somebody else must have thought the same thing. That's why I said it would be easy to kill someone in this hotel. And that's why I don't believe it was any of the hotel people, because it was made to look as if it must be one of the hotel people.
Well, if Ragley was poisoned, and I dare say he was, then we're going to have a hard time locating the poison. Of course, a lot of officious servants must do their duty and wash out all the glasses, including the victims. If it weren't for somebody else's efficiency, we detectives might be quite efficient. There's precious little to go on.
There is one glass I should like to know more about.
You mean Ragley's glass?
No, I mean nobody's glass.
Nobody? Oh, your phantom whiskey drinker.
Let us call him, for the sake of argument, the Quick One. I want you to find the Quick One, Inspector Craven, to follow him to the ends of the earth, to set the whole infernal official machinery at work like a dragnet across the nations, and jolly well recapture the Quick One, because he is the man we want.
Still no news on the Quick One. Are you sure about this, Father?
Oh, yes, quite sure. He's the one we want. I've been having a look through the local newspapers. The late Mr. Ragley was really quite a character. I wonder whether anyone will write his biography.
Got it all in my notebook. Widower, but he did once have a row with a man over his wife. Details are a little vague, but the man was a Scots land agent. And the fellow we're after is a Scot. They say Ragley hated Scotsmen. Perhaps that's the reason.
Perhaps. But then all that tribe of Tory radicals dislike Scotsmen.
Inspector.
Yes, Mr. Wills?
There's an officer here to see you.
If you'll excuse me, Father.
Of course, of course.
Are you quite comfortable, Father?
Oh, yes, quite comfortable, thank you. I've been reading about Mr. Ragley.
Yes?
Yes. Apparently he wrote a good many letters to the newspapers. Of course, the newspapers didn't print those letters, so he had them printed as pamphlets at his own expense.
And circulated to 100 waste paper baskets around Greater Ilford.
But there was a backing of facts behind his fads. He knew this county in every corner and curious detail, and he was a sharp observer.
But I only stab if you'll forgive me, Father.
Are you asking for my forgiveness, Mr. Wills?
What I mean to say is, I only did what I did because I didn't want the hotel to be involved in a scandal.
Really?
But all this fuss over a local busybody. I mean, he wasn't at all important.
Oh, I disagree, Mr. Wills. Once we step off that mystical level of equality, I don't see that most of the so-called important murders are particularly important.
Surely not. I mean to say, if the Prime Minister had been murdered...
As a plain, practical man of the world, I don't think the Prime Minister matters at all. As a mere matter of human importance, I should say he hardly exists at all. Do you suppose if he and the other public men were shot dead tomorrow, there wouldn't be other people to stand up and say that every avenue was being explored, or that the government had the matter under the gravest consideration?
Well... I suppose.
The masters of the modern world don't matter, Mr. Wills. Even the real masters don't matter much. Hardly anybody you ever read about in a newspaper matters at all. But Ragley did matter. He was one of a great line of some half a dozen of men who might have saved England. Didn't you see how that old man, with the heart of a lion, stood up and forgave his enemy as only fighters can forgive? He jolly well did do what the temperance lecturer only talked about. He set an example to us Christians, and was a model of Christianity. And when there is foul and secret murder of a man like that, then I do think it matters. Matters so much that even the modern machinery of police will be a thing that any respectable person may make use of.
Father Brown! Father Brown! Father Brown, I don't know how you do it.
Do it?
You seem to have known he was a murderer before anyone else knew he was a man.
A murderer?
He was nobody. He was nothing. He was just a slight confusion in the evidence. Nobody in the hotel saw him. That girl on the steps.
Megan.
She could hardly swear to him. He was just a fine shade of doubt, founded on an extra dirty glass. But we've got him.
Oh. Ah.
Yes, we've got the quick one. And very quick he was, like Quicksilver in making his getaway. Our men only had just stopped him off on a fishing trip to Orkney, he said. But he's the man, all right. And he's the Scottish land agent who was carrying on with Ragley's wife. He's the one who drank Scotch whiskey in this bar and then took a train to Edinburgh. And nobody would have known it but you.
Ah, yes. Well, what I meant...
Excuse me, Inspector, but I suppose there's no doubt that he is the murderer?
No doubt at all. He very nearly murdered the arresting officer. And he's got a punch like a kick of a horse. Almost got away from five men. Oh, yes. We've got a real killer this time, Mr. Wills.
Where is he?
Outside in the van, in handcuffs. I think it's the wisest course of action to leave him there for the present.
Oh, my. I've done it again.
That you have, Father. You've caught us another criminal.
I really don't understand why this always happens. I always try to say what I mean, but everybody else means such a lot by what I say.
What in the world is the matter now?
Well, you seem to be all certain that this man is a murderer, but I never said he was a murderer.
Of course you did. You said he was the man we wanted.
I did. He is. We want him very much, frightfully. You see, he's the one thing we haven't got in the whole of this horrible case. A witness.
Mr. Grant, I can only apologize most sincerely for this misunderstanding.
Misunderstanding, was it? It was brutality, sir. Brutality, plain and simple.
Mr. Grant, we need your help.
Help? Help? You can go to blazes, Inspector. You wouldn't have treated an Englishman like this.
Too true, alas.
Father, really?
The Scot comes from a poor agricultural land that became a rich industrial land. He is able and active, and thought he was bringing industrial civilization from the north. He simply didn't know that there had been, for centuries, a rural civilization in the south.
What?
Mr. Grant, I am greatly grieved at the treatment you have suffered at the hands of the English police, but I am sure you wish to serve the ends of justice. Yes?
Go on.
What we want from you, Mr. Grant, is simply your evidence on one very important fact.
Send them in, Wills.
Very good, Inspector. This way, gentlemen.
And now, Mr. Grant, I believe you came into the bar just after it opened, at 5:30, and were served with a glass of whiskey.
I hear that so.
I would like you to look around the room and tell me whether the barman who served you is in this room.
Aye, he's present. I'd know him anywhere. When I came in, he was messing around with a bottle of cherry brandy.
As it happens, I already know who the man is, but I think the inspector would like some independent verification.
Well, there he is, plain enough.
Stop him.
It won't do you any good to struggle, Mr. Jukes.
No. I suppose not. Well, it looks as though my customers are going to be kept waiting even longer. Inspector, at least I won't be short of a stiff drink on my way to the scaffold.
Another hour and we'll be back in London. That should be just enough time for you to tell me how you knew Jukes was the murderer.
Oh, I doubt it'll even take an hour, Inspector. It was all quite simple enough. The instant we entered the empty barroom, my first thought was that if the barman left the place unguarded like that, there was nothing in the world to stop you or me or anybody else lifting the flap, walking in, and putting poison in any of the bottles standing waiting for customers.
Risky, though. Imagine having to explain to yourself if you're caught tampering with the bottle.
True, but it was quite simple for Jukes. Don't you remember what you told me about the moment he accosted you outside Mr. Wills' office?
I wonder how much longer are we going to be stuck here? I've got several more clients to visit before the day's out. I'm in wines and spirits, you see.
I see.
He traveled in bottles. Now do you see?
Of course. He brought the poison bottle with him and substituted it for the ordinary bottle.
Which could be done in a flash. Of course, it would hardly do to start poisoning the beer or whiskey that scores of people drink. It would cause a massacre. But when a man is well known as drinking only one special thing...
like cherry brandy.
And you will have your usual, Mr. Ragley?
That's the only decent stuff you've still got. Damn it, I sometimes think the only English thing left in England is cherry brandy.
Cherry brandy, of course, isn't very widely drunk. It would be just like poisoning Ragley in his own home. Only it's a jolly sight safer, because practically the whole suspicion instantly falls on the hotel, or somebody connected with a hotel. There's no earthly reason to suppose that it was done by anyone out of 100 customers that might come into a bar, even if people realized that a customer could do it. It was about as absolutely anonymous and irresponsible a murder as a man could commit.
And that's just exactly why Jukes committed it. He was obviously targeting Ragley. What did he have against the old fellow? Not that he just was a belligerent old loudmouth, surely.
Oh, but Ragley told us the motive for his own murder, right there in the hotel bar.
There's an infernal swindle going on now in every inn in the country that would have raised a revolution in any other country. And I've found out a thing or two about it, I can tell you. You wait till I can get it printed and people will sit up.
He said that he was going to expose a scandal about the management of hotels. The scandal was the pretty common one of a corrupt agreement between hotel proprietors and a salesman who took and gave secret commissions so that his business had a monopoly of all the drinks sold in the place.
And Jukes had that arrangement going with Wills.
It was a swindle at the expense of everybody the manager was supposed to serve. It was a legal offense. So the ingenious Jukes, taking the first moment when the bar was empty, as it often was, stepped inside and made the exchange of bottles. Unfortunately, at that very moment...
Barman, a whiskey, please. A whiskey, and quickly, I'm in a hurry.
Certainly, sir.
Jukes was very much relieved that the customer was a quick one.
I think you're a rather quick one yourself, if you really did suspect Jukes from the start.
Well, he sounded rather rich somehow, and I did sort of ask myself why he should have such a disgustingly rich voice when all those other honest fellows were fairly poor. But I think I knew he was a sham when I saw his big shining breastpin.
You mean because it was a sham?
No, because it was genuine. But I knew you couldn't arrest Jukes based on that alone, and that was why I wanted you to move heaven and earth, so to speak, in order to find the quick one.
Yes, indeed. I had no idea that finding Ragley's killer mattered to you so much.
It mattered to me because all men matter. You matter. I matter. It's the hardest thing in theology to believe. We matter to God. God only knows why. But that's the only possible justification of the existence of policemen. Don't you see? The law really is right in a way, after all. If all men matter, all murders matter. That which he has so mysteriously created, we must not suffer to be mysteriously destroyed.
Tonight's Father Brown mystery, The Quick One, starred J.T. Turner as Father Brown. Featured were Hugh Metzler as Inspector Craven, Rick Pierce as Reverend Jones, David Jesser as Wills, Ellie Hirschman as Ragley, and Thomas Vittorioso as Jenks. Also heard were Rebecca Stevens as Megan, and Joseph Zamparelli as Grant. Tonight's programme was directed by Jerry Robbins and produced by M.J. Cogburn. The executive producer was Mark Vanderberg, and the music was by Kevin MacLeod. Join us again next time for The Father Brown Mysteries. For the Colonial Radio Theatre on the air, this is David Ault speaking.
Welcome back. I loved how Chesterton worked the original story in terms of having the police just misinterpret what he said in assuming that the quick one was actually the killer. And by the way, M.J. Elliott, who writes this series, has also written a series of adaptations of Sherlock Holmes stories. And some of those were from aired by the Sherlock Holmes Society, and I highlighted those a few weeks back on the Sherlock Holmes podcast, and he did a really good job here. He actually, without changing any of the words of the story, made an improvement by shifting an order around. If you listen to Father Brown, a lot of information and thoughts and philosophy comes out as he's in the course of this investigation. And it's easy to almost overlook some of this stuff as it comes out, such as the virtues of dirt. And the last statement that Father Brown spoke in this particular episode was, in the original story, kind of in the middle of all that. By moving it to the end, it gave it a certain emphasis that I think was really appropriate, because it answers a kind of existential question about Father Brown as a detective. That question being, why is a priest going around solving all these mysteries? And what we get in that statement is a pretty good answer. I definitely appreciate how this adaptation was done. As far as I know, Colonial Radio Theater has adapted the most Father Brown stories of anyone who's undertaken it. Of the 52 Father Brown short stories they've released on CD and for audio download, 16. And they are making more episodes right now, even as we speak. The most anyone else has done is 13 by the BBC and by ITV. All right, well, that'll be about it for this program. If you do want to support our listener support campaign, go to support.greatdetectives.net. Colonial Radio Theater appears regularly on the Books Radio channel on SiriusXM. To check colonialradio.com for details, as well as a list of all of their existing titles, as well as many of their upcoming titles. Send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.